Thank you very much, Lynn and everyone. I'm happy to be here. Dev, I was really enjoying that audio that you were playing from your talk yesterday. Immediately, as soon as I came in, it grabbed my attention. Very, very clear talking. I really enjoyed the little bit that I heard. So thank you very much for sharing that again. I am here now for my sharing from the 7 steps to awakening, primarily from my journal, my contemplation of the quotes in that particular book. I'm in a little different setup tonight. My boyfriend is here. He's not usually here on Sunday evenings. He usually leaves just before my teaching on Sundays, and I sit downstairs at my office. But my office is like in the center of a very big basement area. And to the left of my office is kind of a sitting area. And to the right of my office is a gym with weight machines and such. And he was saying he might want to work out. So I said, go ahead. I'll just go sit in Jasmine's room. And, you know, if you feel like working out, then that's great. I won't be disturbing you. So I'm in Jasmine's room, which is a really nice place. Jasmine has the best window in the house. So I'm sitting here next to the window looking out at Pike's Peak. What I don't have that I usually have are my speakers. My speakers are downstairs on my desk. So I'm still going to start with a song. I don't really know what it sounds like on your end anyway when I'm playing it through my speakers, but it's going to sound different tonight because I'm just playing it off of my laptop. But it's still a wonderful song, and it's still a wonderful opportunity just to kind of get still and go within. So just be prepared for a little different sound quality because of the change in the way things are. The song that I'm going to play is from Michael Singer's album, Songs of the Untethered Soul. Last week I played a song from this album. It was called If You Knew How Much I Love You. This one is called There's a Place in My Heart. And by the way, even though the album has got Michael Singer's name on it, at least in iTunes, the artist who's doing the singing is a lady by the name of Kathy Zavada. So this is Kathy Zavada singing There's a Place.
There's a place in my heart where the love is always flowing. A place in my heart where the Lord I'm always knowing. When may I live in the love of my heart? When may I live in the love of my heart? There's a place in my heart where the love is always flowing. A place in my heart where the Lord I'm always knowing. When may I live the love of my heart? When may I live the love of my heart? When may I live the love of my heart? When may I live in the love of my heart? There's a place in my heart where the love is always flowing. A
Yeah, and I don't know what that was like for you all, but when she's singing over and over, when may I live in the love of my heart, you know, the answer that just keeps coming is now. 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 Just over and over and over again throughout that song, now. So what I'm going to do, last week when I was sharing with you all, I actually shared up to and including 676 in my journal. But as we were finishing, there was just this feeling that I wasn't done with 676 yet, and I don't really know why. It wasn't like there was a particular specific thing that I wanted to discuss. It was just this feeling that it would be good to spend more time with 676. So that's what I'm going to do tonight. I'm going to start with 676 and move forward from there. So 676 is in step 3 of the 7 steps to awakening. It's within the section of quotes by Yoga Vasistha, the Supreme Yoga. And this is the quote. It is only a fool that entertains a feeling, this I am, in relation to that temporary appearance known as the body, etc. Again, it is only a fool that entertains a feeling, this I am, in relation to that temporary appearance known as the body, etc. So, of course, he's just called most of us fools, hasn't he? But then in A Course in Miracles, Jesus calls us insane. So I suppose that they are both saying the same thing, maybe one a little, I don't know which word you prefer, insane or fool. I'm going to go ahead and read the journal entry that I had for 676. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the way I do this, I contemplate the 7 steps to awakening. I contemplate the quote, the numbered quote, and then I write in my journal. So what I'm going to read to you is what I wrote in my journal after contemplating the quote that I just read. In accepting the body-mind as what I am, I deny my eternal nature. The filter through which I appear to be this is my attachment to this as what I am. Again, the filter through which I appear to be this is my attachment to this as what I am. It is my desire to be this. Do I want to die? Is death in my heart? If not, why this attachment to something temporary as me? And maybe the only reason that I felt that we had gone over this too quickly last week, and maybe the reason that I felt to stay with it, is simply because these are some very, very good questions. You know, on the spiritual path, we can become very, very good at saying things like, you know, I am not a body. I don't know, similar things to that. But oftentimes when we say these things, we are just saying them. It's what I would call intellectual knowledge, but it's not our true experience. Let me give you an example. Earlier this year, I was doing a gathering in a particular place, and the hostess picked me up. And she did not have a seatbelt on the passenger side of the car, which actually I was like, that's okay. You know, I'm fine with that. But then her driving was very, very different from my driving. And the driving plus the lack of a seatbelt brought up a very distinct nervousness in me. And what I saw is this very distinct nervousness coming up in me. I saw it clear as day. It was the belief I am not safe. And what was underneath the belief I am not safe was the belief I am the body, right? If the belief I am the body was not there, then I am not safe could not be there. I am not safe needs that foundation of this temporary body. So there was definitely, that belief was just completely pushed up by this circumstance of, you know, being in traffic with a style of driving that I was not accustomed to and no seatbelt. I also saw how funny it was because, you know, I'm sure you all remember once upon a time, none of us wore seatbelts or thought anything about it. So I also saw how programmed we are to think that a seatbelt makes us safe. but that wasn't what really needed my attention, even though I laughed at that. What needed my attention, what needed to be looked at with my awareness was seeing the belief that I am the body is still here. Most of the time it can kind of be ignored. And the reason it can kind of be ignored is because there's nothing pushing that button, the button of that belief. Normally, there's not a situation happening that causes the mind to think that the body is unsafe like there was then. And it's very easy when we're in circumstances that aren't pushing a particular button for us to think, I don't have that belief. You know, that belief is not coming up for me. But then put ourselves in the right situation, and guess what? There it is. There was someone I was talking to after the teaching last week who seemed to indicate that, I should know by now that I am not a body, you know, and that this one definitely knows, you know, he or she is not a body. And, you know, what was wrong with me? Why didn't I know that yet? First of all, I think that if we are judging someone else for still having a spiritual or still having a false belief that we believe we've transcended, that's probably also an indication that we have not transcended it. If I am judging someone else for still having a spiritual, I'm sorry, I said spiritual twice, but I meant false belief. If I am judging someone else for still having a false belief that I think I have transcended, I probably have not transcended it. I probably have repressed it, or it's dormant right now. It's not being triggered. But that wasn't the reason I felt to come back to this quote, because that conversation didn't happen until after the teaching. And it was at the end of the teaching that I just had this feeling to come back and look at this a little more. And again, I think the feeling just came from the fact that this is very, very good for us to just spend some time looking at, even if what I say is somewhat repeating myself, even if what I say is not new and profound. To really spend some time looking at this felt important, not to just rush by it in the last 10 minutes of an hour. So again, the journal entry says, in accepting the body mind as what I am, I deny my eternal nature. Well, I told you that when I was in the situation with the driving that I was not accustomed to and no seatbelt, that I noticed first that I felt unsafe. And then I noticed second that underneath that was the belief I am the body, that it had to still be there or I would not have felt unsafe. But what I also notice whenever I look at the belief that I am the body, What I notice is that that belief is in the mind. It is, you know, the mind, although the mind does not go around all day saying, I am a body, I am a body. You know, it's not that covert in its expression of the belief. It is the mind that has the belief, I am the body. Which means if there's a belief that I believe I am a body, listen carefully to this. If there's a belief that I think I am a body or believe I am a body, that means that I must also still think I am the mind. I must still think those thoughts are mine. So I have not detached from the I am in safe thought. I have not detached from the I am a body thought. And I have not detached from the mind. And for me, the mind then is the root of this entire little stack of beliefs. Which means, instead of trying to detach from the I am unsafe belief, and instead of trying to detach from the I am the body belief, I focus my attention on detaching from the mind. Because if I am detached from the mind, I'm also going to be detached from anything the mind thinks or believes. And for me, this is very, very good news because it feels easier in any given moment to detach from the mind. You know, there are a number of ways to detach from the mind, but I think one of the best ways, at least in my experience, one of the best ways to detach from the mind is self-inquiry. I love practicing self-inquiry the way that it was taught to me in the teachings of Inner Ramana. And the way self-inquiry was taught to me in the teachings of Inner Ramana was this. So the thought comes up that I am unsafe, and now, because I've already looked at it, I can look very quickly underneath it and see that I'm attached to the mind, right? That happens in a nanosecond because I've already spent the time looking at the belief that I'm unsafe and finding the root cause of that belief. So now something else occurs and the unsafe belief is triggered. Boom, boom, boom. I look down and I see that right now I'm listening to the mind. So then I ask the question. Actually, there's two different ways I do this, so I'll demonstrate both, because one may be more effective for you than the other. One way that I do this is I ask the question, what is it that says I'm unsafe? And when I ask the question, what is it that says I'm unsafe, some kind of a shift automatically occurs, where instead of listening to the mind as if it is me, I automatically, with the question, become the observer looking at the mind. As soon as I ask that question, what is it that says I am unsafe? I am now looking at the mind instead of believing I am the mind. That detaches immediately. Immediately I become aware of myself as the observer. And then just to kind of finish that off, I ask the question, what am I? And that more solidifies that I am the observer, the awareness. And in that moment, I'm then detached from the mind. Another way that I sometimes practice the self-inquiry, not really sure where I got this. I might have got this from Ramana Maharshi, from his book, The Spiritual Teachings of Ramana Maharshi, but I'm not 100% certain on that. But another way that I sometimes ask the question is simply by asking, what is it that sees this thought, I am unsafe? And again, immediately, that pulls me back. What is it that sees this thought? I'm now focusing my attention on the awareness or the observer rather than the thought. Now, if we look back at the Yoga Vasistha quote, the Yoga Vasistha quote says, it is only a fool that entertains a feeling, this I am, in relation to that temporary appearance known as the body. So I could, if I wanted to, say, it is only a fool that does not practice self-inquiry, or it is only a fool that does not practice questioning the attachment to mind, or it is only a fool that blindly believes whatever the mind says, right? All of these ideas go along together. And again, the word fool, I don't think is meant to offend us. I think the word fool is meant to wake us up, because it is not our nature to be the fool. Not that kind of fool anyway. It is not our nature to be the fool. It's our nature to be wisdom. And so if we hear that we are being a fool, we can wake up and start being wisdom, because that is our nature, right? So going back to my journal entry for 676, in accepting the body mind as what I am, I deny my eternal nature. The filter through which I appear to be this, meaning this body or this mind, the filter through which I appear to be this is my attachment to this as what I am. It is my desire to be this. Now, this is something else that if we choose to, We can begin to look at and question, why do I desire to be this? Or how do I desire to be this? And you know, I remember one particular conversation where I was talking to a person who didn't particularly like themselves. Now, you may remember last week we talked about the fact, that you don't have to like the personal self to be attached to it, right? You're just attached to it because you think it's me. You could hate that personal self that you think of as me, but it's still precious to you because you think it is me, right? You don't have to like it. Well, I was one time talking to a person who did not at all like herself as she perceived herself to be, who she thought she was, did not at all like herself. But we were into some kind of a discussion, or maybe it was even around the time when I was doing this contemplation. Maybe it was around December of 2012. I don't remember what brought me to go into this with her, but her and I began to question, why, you know, if you don't like yourself at all, why are you attached to who you think you are? Right? It kind of seems like, at least to one part of the logical mind, that maybe you would be really attached to yourself if you like yourself. But if you don't like yourself, it should be very easy to let go of it. And that did not appear to be the case at all. So why? And so as we began to talk, in spite of how much she did not like herself, and I really cannot emphasize how much she did not like herself, she does not like herself more than the average person does not like themselves. So in spite of how much she did not like herself, she could still list things about herself that she thought was better than anyone else. And by better than, I mean she was more comfortable with that. She was more comfortable with herself than any other thought of being anything else or anyone else. You could say that she was attached to herself simply because it was familiar, because she knew it, because she understood it. It was better than the unknown. And I suspect that's true of all of us. I suspect, you know, some of us might say, oh, I like myself because, you know, maybe we list certain qualities, you know, of what we like about ourselves. But I suspect that's only on the surface. I suspect the real reason we're attached to ourself is simply because it is familiar. And in fact, just by coincidence, the daily quote today is by Jan Fraser. Let me pull that up real quick and read to you what Jan Fraser says in this quote, because it really goes very well with what I'm pointing at right now. Hold on one moment while I grab the quote. And of course, we'll talk about the daily quote tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern time if you want to come and talk about it. But listen to this daily quote from Jan Fraser. She says, "Many spiritual seekers who say their wish is to awaken don't actually want what they believe they do. This becomes clear sometimes at the approach to the brink of what feels like a void, where the obliteration of the egoic self seems imminent. With a shocked recognition of what is being asked, the person will recoil." Now listen to this sentence. "The scale of the loss, the dissolution of the familiar self, is beyond what was bargained for." The scale of the loss, the dissolution of the familiar self, is beyond what was bargained for. So what about that idea that we are really attached to me, right? To this mind, this body, this personality, this self-concept, merely because it's familiar. For better or worse, I know it. Right? Isn't this what people would also call the fear then of the unknown? The fear to step into the mystery? I'm going to go back and read the journal entry again. "In accepting the body-mind as what I am, I deny my eternal nature. The filter through which I appear to be this is my attachment to this as what I am. It is my desire to be this." And then the quote just asks a couple of inquiries. Do I want to die? Is death in my heart? And the only reason those questions are being asked are to highlight the point that what I am is eternal, my truth is eternal, and yet I am choosing to be attached to something temporary because it's familiar. It's just highlighting that so that we can look at it. Because, you know, when we bring our awareness to something, right, that awareness begins to heal it. So these questions are merely meant to bring our awareness to it. It's not meant to be some kind of intellectual question that we go about answering. It's merely to bring our awareness. Why would I, you know, which is eternal, life, isness, why would I, impersonal, non-personal, right, non-attached, completely free, all things isness, want to be attached to something temporary just because it's familiar? And I don't know how many of you have experienced the sadness of losing something that you were attached to before. Maybe a job, maybe a pet, maybe a loved one. You know, maybe even in some cases, a teacup. I read a whole book once about a teacup that was broken that had been passed down in the family. It was a Buddhist book. It was meant to show, it was meant to teach us to let go of attachment, but the whole thing was about a teacup. You know, when we are really attached to something and we lose it, we are still here, right? But there's great suffering. I wonder about the suffering that occurs when this body personality dies, ends, if I am still attached to it. I don't know the answer to that question, but I assume that I am much more attached to this body, mind, personality than anything else. If I can suffer when I lose a child, suffer when I lose a pet, suffer when I lose a teacup that's been handed down for generations, what kind of suffering occurs when I lose what I think I am? Why would I, which can be blissfully myself and allow everything temporary to come and go, to be enjoyed while here, but to come and go and be blissfully myself, why would I want to be attached to something temporary to such a degree? You know, and again, the questions are only meant to get us to look at this, because often we don't look at these things, not deeply, not deeply. We read them, you know, and we listen to other teachers talk about them, but sometimes we just seem to go by them so fast. You know, they're at the intellectual level only, but we don't look deeply. And to me, the seven steps to awakening is about looking deeply at each and every quote, looking very, very deeply, so that something within us becomes more and more ready for awakening. And let me tell you a secret about the word awakening. A friend of mine, a spiritual teacher, once said that he calls it awakening because it's more gentle and it makes people want it. But in reality, it's annihilation, or a similar word like that. I think he used the word annihilation. I could be mistaken. He calls it awakening because it's more gentle and makes people want it. But in reality, it's annihilation. Annihilation of the personal self. Yes, disillusion of the personal me. And you know what? If we listen to Jan Fraser, she's not saying anything different here. Let's go back to her. Maybe I don't even have to show up for work tonight at 10. We'll already have the quote discussed. Listen to Jan Fraser. Many spiritual seekers who say their wish is to awaken don't actually want what they believe they do. This becomes clear sometimes at the approach to the brink of what feels like a void, where the obliteration of the egoic self seems imminent, with a shocked recognition of what is being asked, the person will recoil. The scale of the loss. Listen to those words. Remember I was saying a while ago, I can't imagine the mourning, the suffering that will occur if I'm attached to this as me and it ends, right? She says the scale of the loss, the disillusion of the familiar self, is beyond what was bargained for. Again, she starts this quote with many spiritual seekers who say their wish is to awaken, right? And then they find out this is beyond what was bargained for. Well, for me, the contemplation of the seven steps to awakening is to prepare us to ready us, to help us look deeply at the foolishness of our ego attachment, so that we are ready when the invitation comes to allow that to die, that we are ready to rest, accept, and trust our way right through it. We are ready to allow that obliteration or dissolution so that we can awaken to the eternal self, the truth. And that's why we don't want to rush through these things. Again, talking about one quote or two quotes for a whole hour, sometimes it's like, what more is there to say about it? There's nothing more to say about it, but we're looking longer. We're looking deeper, right? It's We're giving it the opportunity to really loosen something within us that needs to be loosened. So let me read again what Yoga Vasistha said. It is only a fool that entertains a feeling, this I am, in relation to that temporary appearance known as the body, etc. All right, and let's read from my journal, 676. In accepting the body mind as what I am, I deny my eternal nature. The filter through which I appear to be this is my attachment to this as what I am. It is my desire to be this. Do I want to die? Is death in my heart? If not, why this attachment to something temporary as me? And with that said, I am ready to move on to the next quote. So I am scrolling down and clicking on quote number 677 in the journal. And what I will do is my best to copy this and paste it for you guys. Usually Lynn, L-I-N, does this for me, so I'm a little slow, but I can do it. There you go. There you go. See, I told you I could do it. The link to 677. And I'm going to start by reading the quote in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Let me have a drink first. Let me do that. All right, 677. It is my fault that I still cling to the notion that you, my mind, is a real entity. When I realize that all these phenomena are illusory appearances, then you will become no mind, and all the memories of sense experiences, etc., will come to an end. We talk about responsibility for sight. That's what this quote reminds me of. Doesn't this sound like great responsibility for sight? Let me read it again. Yoga Vasistha, the Supreme Yoga, is how it's listed in the Seven Steps to Awakening. It is my fault that I still cling to the notion that you, my mind, is a real entity. When I realize that all these phenomena are illusory appearances, then you will become no mind, and all the memories of sense experiences, etc., will come to an end. All right, so I'm going to go to my journal and see what I wrote. Here we go from the journal. If I have not let go of believing myself to be a person, it is because I am still attached to the idea of being a person. I still desire it. This is the primary attachment, and it must be looked at carefully. And again, that's why we came back to 676, right? So that we could look at this carefully, so we did not rush over it. But, you know, first of all, I want to tell you, and I'm sure that some of you know this, I love the Seven Steps to Awakening. You know, at different times on this spiritual path, I have had different primary practices. The first primary practice was A Course in Miracles. And then A Course in Miracles took me to the point of being the scribe of NTI. And I didn't just write NTI. It became my second primary practice. And I spent years as the student of NTI. But then at some point, it took me to the teachings of Inner Ramana. And again, I didn't just write the teachings of Inner Ramana. I was the student of the teachings of Inner Ramana. It was a primary practice. But there came a point, and I believe this would have been in December of 2011, when I was guided to go to the Seven Steps to Awakening. And since that time, the Seven Steps to Awakening has been my primary practice. And one thing that my primary practice at every point along the journey. Let me share a few things my primary practice at every point along the journey has done. One, when I am with my primary practice, when my attention is on my primary practice, it brings me to a point of great self-honesty. In the presence of my primary practice, I do not lie to myself, and I love that. I love that. The other thing that happens in the presence of my primary practice is that I am wholly motivated, wholly inspired to, if you will, go further, go deeper, be more committed, right? I mean, and in a very joyous, joyous way. That's why I use the word wholly motivated. So because my primary practice does these two things, which you can hear in my journal, is a directness. And it's a directness that I love. I would not want to sit down with my primary practice and miss the point. I want that directness. I want that clarity. Sometimes when I share from my 7 Steps journal, or earlier when I was sharing from other teachings that were my primary practice, sometimes people will say things like, Regina, don't be so hard on yourself. Who's being hard on herself? I can't find anyone being hard on herself here. When I sit down with my 7 Steps, there's a glow that begins to happen. It starts in the heart, and it embraces the entire body and the entire environment around me. And I can sit with my 7 Steps journal for hours and not even know that hours have passed. Look up at the clock and say, oh my God, you know, I had no idea I had been sitting here for so long. So this directness that comes is not coming in a hard on myself type way. It's pure love. Pure, pure love. And I can't think of anything that I love more at this point in my life than being with my contemplation of the 7 Steps to awakening. All right, now, why did I say all of that? Let's go back to what is written in my journal for 677. If I have not let go of believing myself to be a person, it is because I am still attached to the idea of being a person. I still desire it. I love this direct looking. I love this self-honesty. I know you guys have heard me say this. If you've listened to me teach, you've heard me say this a million times. There is nothing in me that wants to lie to myself. There is nothing in me that wants to be the fool, to pretend that I am enlightened or awake or self-realized or whatever word that you choose to put on that. There is nothing in me that seeks anything that is not absolutely genuine. Absolutely genuine. This is what I heard Dove saying also, I think, in the audio that was playing just before I came on, which is why that audio immediately caught my attention. He was singing my song, right? He was talking about integrity. Yeah, integrity. He was saying something about how it's not God watching me. It's my integrity, right? My integrity, right? My integrity. So I love this taking responsibility of knowing that if I still see myself as Regina, and I got to talk about degrees for a moment. You know, some people say there's no such thing as degrees. And maybe someday I will be awake enough that I will say the same thing. I can't speak from a frame of reference I have not yet achieved. But from the frame of reference I'm at now, there are degrees. I am not attached to Regina as who I am like I once was. And that again is said with absolute integrity. I watch Regina. I watch her say things and I watch her do things from a place that is not her. But at the same time, I know that the complete letting go of the person has not occurred. I know that. And again, I have no desire to fool myself or to do anything that is not genuine. So I know this. And so when I look at quotes like quote 677, and this is Yoga Vasistha, and you know what? I don't know Yoga Vasistha, but from reading these quotes in the Seven Steps to Awakening, I would say Yoga Vasistha was ahead of me on this spiritual path. And yet he's willing to take responsibility for any little bit of attachment that might still be there. What a magnificent example he is setting for us. He says, it is my fault that I still cling to the notion that you, my mind, is a real entity, right? If he is going to set that example by taking responsibility, I want to follow in his lead. You know, we had another quote from Jan Fraser a few days ago. In fact, I've been really loving these Jan Fraser quotes, really loving them. Also the Bentino quotes. I've been loving both of them that we've been having for the last week or so. And see, listen to this Jan Fraser quote. She says, there are many kinds of knowledge, only one of them worth everything. Only one of them not subject to opinion or degree or damage. If you come to that, you will know what I mean. If you don't, listen to someone who has. Listen to someone who has. I love that too. I love that when she's saying, if you do not yet know from direct experience, listen to someone who does know, right? And when I read these quotes, this is one of the ways that I listen to someone who knows. It's not the only way, but it's one of the ways that I listen to someone who knows. And when I listen to someone who knows and he sets the tone, the example of taking full responsibility, it inspires me in a loving and genuine way to take full responsibility myself. I don't even want to say the reason that I'm still attached to thinking I'm this person is because awakening hasn't happened yet. I don't even want to say that. Because that doesn't feel honest to me. Because in any moment, whether this great shift called awakening has happened yet or not, whether this obliteration of the ego has happened yet or not, in any moment, I can practice self-inquiry. In any moment, I can detach from the mind. The fact that awakening has not occurred to me is not a valid reason for being attached to the personality as who I am, or being attached to the mind as who I am. I had been gifted with magnificent tools from magnificent teachers. And I can use those tools at any time. I may have to use them repeatedly. You know, one of the things Joel Goldsmith talked about was dying to himself 1,000 times a day. You know, I don't know Joe Goldsmith well enough, but it's possible that he did not perceive himself as having passed through the ego death. But he did not let that stop him from dying the death 1,000 times a day. Right? He took responsibility and died to himself 1,000 times a day. And you know, I can do that too. In any moment that I'm not making that choice, in any moment that I'm slipping into believing I'm Regina, right? That is because in that moment, I want that familiarity. I somehow feel safe there. Or I think it will make me safe. Regina, the mind, will make me safe. So I love looking at this. I love realizing that I am not a victim of awakening has not happened yet. I also love realizing not only am I not a victim, it's not an excuse for not being vigilant now. You know, oh, it will come someday. Awakening will happen someday. Until then, let's drink and be merry. That doesn't feel right for me. It doesn't feel right for me. It feels right for me to be, for lack of better words, as awake as I can be in every moment. As aware as I can be in every moment. Knowing the difference between the true self and the false self in every moment. Lynn is saying it is already here. And that's why, you know, that's why in every moment we can die to the true self, let the false self die, you know, die to the true self. That's why, because it's already here. But we may have to do it repeatedly until this shift occurs that comes from grace, right? But we can do it repeatedly. We only need to be motivated to do so. We only need to want it more than we want the familiar self. And not only that, one thing that has been occurring to me is I have talked to a couple of people. I think one of those people is in this room right now, who feel that they had that invitation come, feel very certainly that they had that invitation come where the ego self would have been obliterated, that have told me they know they pulled back from fear. They know there was a thought of something in the world that needed to be done. Something about the personal self they couldn't let go of yet. And when I hear these stories from dear friends who are willing to share, one thing that also says to me is another thing that we can do if we want to is we can practice giving up the personal self in every moment. Just keep practicing. You know, the husband says, I want this. And the wife me begins to think, but I want this. And then I see that and I say, ah, here's another opportunity to die. Die 1,000 times a day, as Jill Goldsmith said. And if I take that opportunity to die over and over and over again, then when that invitation comes by grace, maybe I will be prepared to allow it to complete itself without my interference, without my pulling back. Some of you may know that I talked to Ellie Ruzdar once. Ellie Ruzdar offers these retreats at her house, I think one weekend a month. And what she claims, which of course I could not possibly know whether it's true or not, but what she claims is that when you come to these retreats, she can take you to that brink, to that point of the void. But she only accepts people that she feels are ready, that when she takes you to that brink, that you are ready to allow it to complete itself rather than having a mind that will pull back out again. You know, she interviews you, and if she thinks you're ready, she will let you come. If she thinks you are not ready, she will not let you come. And she interviewed me, I don't know how long it was, 3 years ago, and she told me I was not ready. And some of you, when you heard that, some of you said, oh my God, Regina, if you're not ready, who is? I don't think there's anything offensive in you're not ready. I think all that means is continue to get ready. Continue to do whatever you can. For me right now, there's a number of things that is. Obviously, I've mentioned the 7 Steps journal. There's also the practice of meditation. And then there's the more general practices that we learned more through A Course in Miracles and NTI of kind of watching the personal mind, you know, and not listening to it. Watching it chatter, but not listening to it as I go about my normal day. You know, all of these things to me, you know, work together. But I got to tell you something else, and this is important, I think. I don't do any of this because I think I have to. I don't do any of this because I think I'm unworthy or bad not by not being awakened. I know there's this thought in the mind that if you're not awake, you're bad. I've seen that thought. I had that thought. It's gone. I don't do any of this out of any type of coercion coming from outside of me or inside of me. I do this because I love it. Because there's nothing else I'd rather do. Because it's the calling of my heart, and I'm in harmony with my heart. So again, let's finish up by just reading each of these quickly one more time. So quote 677 from the 7 Steps to Awakening. It is my fault that I still cling to the notion that you, my mind, is a real entity. When I realize that all these phenomena are illusory appearances, then you will become no mind, and all the memories of sense experiences, etc., will come to an end. And then from the journal, number 677. If I have not let go of believing myself to be a person, it is because I am still attached to the idea of being a person. I still desire it. This is the primary attachment, and it must be looked at carefully. And with that, I am done, and I will be back at 10. And then if you want, we can discuss that Jan Fraser quote, because it will be time to contemplate the daily quote together then. Goodbye, everyone.